You're listening to the only show that looks at business from a different perspective, the coaching perspective, with your host, Master Business Coach, Doug Gefeller.
Welcome to today's episode of The Coaching Perspective. I'm your host, Doug Gefeller, and our guest for today is Nancy Egan. And the topic title is, Do Your Stakeholders Know Who You Are? Or What Really Matters to Professional Service Firms? But before we get to Nancy, if you're listening to this show live, then you're on octalkradio.net. Thank you for being here. And if you're listening on one of our podcasts, then thank you for visiting our website, thecoachingperspective.com. While you're there, be sure to check out the archives for some other great shows from the past. Well, you know, today's a special guest. I've had the opportunity of working with Nancy for a number of years. We have a mutual client, and monthly I have had the chance to sit in on a marketing meeting and watch the kind of magic that Nancy has done with this professional service firm. So I am really excited to have her with us today. Let me give you a little background on Nancy. Nancy is known as a pioneer marketing and brand strategist. She's a frequent lecturer, panelist, and workshop leader on a range of design, real estate, and marketing topics, including 8 years as part of the executive education program at Harvard's Graduate School of Design. In addition, she has taught at Yale University School of Architecture. I didn't know you could do both those schools. I'm okay, Harvard and Yale. Columbia University, the University of Wisconsin, and Rice University. So join me as we welcome Nancy to have an active discussion about how your image is seen by customers, staff, and peers. Nancy, welcome to The Coaching Perspective.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I'm really honored. I know who some of your past guests have been, and I feel like I'm in awfully good company.
Well, you set the bar. You're going to set the bar a notch above. So I'm really excited. And like I said to our guests when I introduced you, you know, it has been a pleasure knowing you and watching you perform your magic. You know, so many times I have great guests, but I don't know them that well personally. And for you, I feel like I do. So.
Well, we have. We've had a very good collaboration there with our clients, and I think it's been really wonderful to see that kind of sustained work over time, what it really results in. So so we're good.
Wonderful. Well, look, let's get started. Start off by telling our audience, what did you do before what you're doing now? It's probably not very good grammar, but you got the idea.
Well, I've been doing what I do for a very long time, but before that, I worked in large architectural firms. And when you use the word pioneer, I'm always sure that people think, well, what does that mean? But it was that when I started out working in architectural firms, there really wasn't a marketing department. It was just the very, very beginnings of marketing professional services in the architecture, engineering, and construction business. And so we made it up as we went along, and we learned from each other. And I was very fortunate to belong to an organization called the Society for Marketing Professional Services, and they were really my graduate school on this topic, because my own training had been in the humanities and not at all in either marketing or architecture. So I felt very lucky. And when I first left the large firm, I went to the head of the firm and said, can I give you back my benefits package and become a consultant? And so for a number of years, I worked really more as an embedded, what we'd call an embedded consultant today. And then eventually it evolved into this small consultancy that is usually me and a handful of others. And then I work much like you've seen me work, in collaboration with other consultants in kind of virtual firms, virtual consultancies, providing marketing advice and actual implementation of programs.
Well, and you know, that has been wonderful to watch. I didn't know that you didn't start in that field. For some reason, I assumed that was your educational background, too. You've certainly hit it well.
I think I got really lucky. I think it was a time when the professions were really changing. You know, for many years, the American Institute of Architects had rules against any kind of advertising or marketing. And those things had just started to change when I got into the profession. And so, you know, once, you know, a little change then leads to sort of a waterfall of opportunity. And I think I was just very, very fortunate. And I also started in Houston, Texas in those days, which was a big boom town. And it is again. but in those days, there was oil money and all kinds of, you know, international business people coming to town. And so I think all of us, we looked a lot smarter than we were. A lot of it was just a really good market in the early 80s.
Hey, we're never going to put down a good market. It makes all of us look better.
It makes all of us look really smart.
Well, you know, I want to make one comment before we get too far. This for the benefit of our listeners is that while Nancy does specialize in architectural firms, and maybe some of her examples today will be about that, I just want to share that I have sat in for years now with our mutual client, which is an architectural firm, and listen to her give them advice, madly scrambling and making notes on how I can apply what she's talking about to my own coaching practice. So don't tune out if you're not an architect. This has got universal benefits here. So, Nancy, tell us about your business today and what is it morphed into? Who do you serve? What do you do? What makes you unique?
Well, as I said, it's a small consultancy, and some days that's me, but usually it's with a handful of other people who are good writers and people who keep me organized. I tend to be a fast start, and I need, as someone once said, an eldest child Virgo to walk behind me and make sure everything gets finished. But it's good to know what you need. That's one of the great lessons. But what we do is we work primarily, as you just said, with architects and engineers, primarily architects. But I have worked with many people in the development business and have worked with people in construction. So really that whole big, you know, real estate design construction world. And what we do for them are really two primary things. One is marketing strategy, which is not that different from any kind of professional services marketing strategy, trying to help them identify their best clients and get involved in helping them shape their own story. And that really, having started out inside of firms, really doing everything from punching binders on the floor at midnight to going out and actually calling on clients, you start to see where your own strengths are. And my own, you know, long suit tended to be helping people who weren't professional writers or even speakers to articulate what they wanted to say. And that really has led me into developing some expertise in branding and brand strategy. And then what we do is once we help a client establish their identity, we help them do the rollout in a lot of different ways. We help them develop what is now called content, and it can be everything from the words on your website to a byline article in a trade magazine to the language that you're using in your PowerPoint presentation. And then we also take those messages to the editors at trade magazines, design magazines, and now more and more to people in online media, including helping clients develop their social media strategies.
Okay, wonderful. So let me ask, when a client comes to you, what is the typical problem that they are articulating that they think that you're going to help them with?
Well, it's, of course, as you know from being a coach, it's never the problem that they say. It's never that problem. And so usually they say, you know, our marketing program isn't working. We need to have better business development. We need to be able to make more sales. And as you probably say, really? Tell me more.
Oh, you're stealing my secrets, Nancy.
So, you know, as a good friend of mine said, now's the time to lay back in the weeds and listen as they start to unfurl what's going on. And I think what I find more and more is they haven't really decided what matters to them. They know that they're selling a service, let's say it's architecture, and they know that they love what they do. When they get to go and design something, that's wonderful. But they haven't asked themselves some of the hard questions about who is their best client and why is that kind of client their best client? What is the alignment between what they're really about and what that client wants that makes it so magical and makes it work so well? And so I'm always pushing the clients to dig back into why did they go into the business in the first place? What is it that really makes them get up in the morning and want to go to work? What is it that matters at the end of the day? You know, would you do this? And of course, people are in business to make money, but they're, believe me, nobody goes into architecture to make money in the first place. They'd go into, you know, they'd go into investment banking. You know, they'd do something else. But all that being said, most of my clients have very, very successful practices, and they make good livings and enjoy what they do because they are able to give back so much to our communities. But pushing them to say, okay, what happens here? What gets rewarded? You know, it's really asking so many questions. And oftentimes what you'll find is there is what we would call cognitive dissonance. What they say and what they do are two entirely different things.
Oh, yes.
And it's really getting beyond that. You know, as in most service firms, people will always say, you know, people are the most important thing around here. Well, and then you find out they're working people really hard and not paying them maybe what they should be, and they're not, and they don't have a reward system that's based on performance. It might be based on seniority. And you start saying, really? Is that putting people at the center? And so then you can dig in and say, maybe that's not it. What is it that we want to do? And the more you dig, the more you get closer to what I would call their authentic values, the things that matter most to them. And it's never a straight path. It's not like I have five magic questions. It's asking the same questions over and over and countering when they come back with more whys. When you say that, what do you mean? I remember going into a client where they were having a problem with their director of marketing. And this was just as really, you know, every computer started to have all the great software to do brochures and you know, every single workstation could be the marketing department.
Right.
And this is a terrific business development guy of the old school. He was a country club, play golf, slap him on the back kind of guy. And he had been tremendously successful in his career. But he was really having a hard time grappling with the whole advent of all of these new ways that anybody could make a brochure at their desk. And in fact, they were, because he didn't think of his department as kind of a resource for the entire firm. And so when I asked the head of the firm, I said, well, gosh, you know, have you talked to him about this? Yes, we have. Well, how did he do in his last review? Well, we gave him a big raise.
Yeah.
Why? Well, the company had done very well. And so he got the raise, even though nobody was happy with his performance. And so it's sticking in his thing. So what mattered there? Was it that they were financially successful, or that they had a marketing department that was really running at top performance?
So let me ask you this then, Nancy. You know, you're typically called in and you're dealing with the owners, you're at the C-suite level talking to those people. Where do you get the answers to these questions? Do they have the answer there, or do you find it elsewhere in the company?
You have to do both. Sometimes, and I think I've been very lucky in that a number of my clients are remarkably self-aware about the issues at hand. And usually by the time they arrive looking for outside marketing help, they know that there's an issue. And so if you're lucky enough to do that and, you know, hit on, and architects are, you know, they're problem solvers, so they love to solve problems, even if the problem is them. So, but on the other hand, there are oftentimes, and I think this is particularly true when there are a group of partners, and this would be true, I'm sure, in a law firm or an accounting firm where you have, you know, 5 to 10 people who are really running a larger practice. And what's difficult there is they're often, you know, false democracies. Everybody agrees to everything, and then they go off and do whatever they please.
Yeah, reluctance to address the real issues, yes, to have those difficult conversations.
Yes. And so that's when you end up saying, wouldn't it be interesting to do some staff surveys? Let's see what they say matters most around here. And that's when you can oftentimes really break through and make some real headway. People are stunned because they've just stopped listening.
So give me an example. You've asked these questions. You've dug around the firm. You've found out what matters most, not what they would like to profess, but what they really practice.
Right.
Is that right?
Right.
And now that you know that, how does that tie into the marketing message? Can you give me an example?
Can I give you an example? I could probably give you 5 examples.
I know you could.
But I'm thinking, you know, I had worked with a large Boston-based firm, and they're actually the perfect example in that they were a 10-partner practice. And really smart, absolutely the go-to firm in Boston if you wanted to put up a developer-style building. You know, Boston's one of the toughest cities in the country to get a building built. And they knew the Boston Redevelopment Association Authority very, very well. They knew the community boards. They knew what it took to get these buildings built. And so they, nice, healthy practice. They also had a good academic practice. And the 10 partners would meet once a week in their partner meeting. And they would tell each other, basically, what good guys they were. Meanwhile, the firm was growing very, very quickly during the prior to 2007, when we all know that it got really different. The world changed. But prior to that, they were growing very, very, very quickly. And, you know, this is one of the situations that happen. You have to hire people really quickly. And if you haven't really worked out your cultural template, you know, you end up hiring the wrong people because you haven't come to terms with who fits and who doesn't fit. And so they ended up having turnover that they couldn't quite put their finger on. They ended up getting crosswise with an associate architect on a big project. And these really were good guys. These are not people who in any way, shape, or form wanted to do anything wrong. They wanted to do the right thing. So we really did back up and do a couple of things. We spent some time talking about what really mattered there. One of the things that many, many firms say is we are collaborative. And we kept saying as we worked with them, you really are collaborative? Give us an example of how you're collaborative, where you're really working together and really openly sharing ideas. And they couldn't come up with very many of them. So we said, we don't really think you're collaborative. We think you are collegial, which is a huge difference. And so at the end of this, we also did an internal survey of their staff, got some surprising answers. But the wonderful thing that happened is out of it, we came up with a really interesting description of their brand, of what the key values were for the firm. And they took it even another step in that they developed this great poster that could then, with all of the values and some key ideas, and was, you know, bright colored, and it could be broken into little pieces the size of playing cards, and they were notched. And one of the great rollouts of this program was they held a design contest where you actually tore apart the poster and then could build it, to rebuild it with these cards into a bunch of different structures so that everybody in the firm actually engaged physically with the ideas.
I like that. What a cool idea.
It was a very cool idea, and it was very successful. So I think, you know, there was a lot of pushback, but once they ran with it, they're the ones who wanted to make sure that it got down through to, you know, the receptionist.
And in this particular case, Nancy, once you were able to define what their culture was really all about, what matters most to them, as you say, and they conveyed this to the employees, how did it translate to their clients, and which do you think had the greater impact, communicated to the employees or the clients?
You know, I think that the communication to the clients just becomes easier because everybody across the firm, even if they don't use the same words, they're saying the same thing when they talk about work. There's an expectation about the kind of service. I mean, this is a firm that wins design awards, but they're not what we call in the architecture business big D designers. They're not there wasn't a lot of ego, but, you know, delivering good service, I don't care what business you're in, if it's a root beer stand, delivering good service will make or break you. And so they were able to reinforce their service message. They were able to generate a certain pride in the work that they did do, and that just translated to the clients. It also helped us to decide what kind of content we wanted to develop in terms of articles, and we were able to collaborate with the clients in a very interesting way in developing some materials. And there's nothing that's better than any kind of client testimonial when they actually become your partner in developing materials.
Yeah. You know, the thing that strikes me here is that, you know, we started out, this is not where I think most people would expect a branding conversation to go. You know, a branding conversation means I'm going to come up with a fancy logo, a new packaging for my product, something like that. And what you're talking about is really things that I sometimes don't hear when we're talking about strategy, OD kinds of things, who we are. Have we communicated it internally and externally? What's important? What are our values? Do we share them in common? Is that right?
Exactly. Exactly. Because if we don't start there, you know, it could be, you know, your firm name here. And you and I've had this conversation about mission statements before.
On infinitum.
Yeah, that, you know, if it's just a bunch of platitudes and they don't really resonate with your organization, don't even do it. Because the truth is, clients are pretty smart. And they will pretty well on their own figure out who they think you are. And so I think it really is critical, because we can control the message if we're, you know, if we're telling the truth to ourselves. You know, what did they say? Who was it, Lao Tzu, that said, "He who knows others is wise. He who knows himself is enlightened."
Yeah, and so I like that one.
If we start by knowing ourselves and knowing our firm, then we can actually go out and engage with the clients in a much more authentic and meaningful way. You know, there was, of course, I was reading actually this morning online. I read Seth Godin every day.
I like his stuff.
I do too. And, you know, 4 days out of 7, I think he's brilliant. And the other 3 days, I feel like I could have written that, but I didn't. But he says, you know, you don't find customers for your products. You find products for your customers. And I think what he means by that, or at least my takeaway on that, is you start to know your clients so well that you really can create on their behalf. You don't invent the widget and then go out and sell the widget. You say, okay, what do these people really need? And there's nothing like professional services businesses that is more in tune with that. What do these people really need? And how can I, from my really particular, you know, place that I stand, the territory that I own, the knowledge that I have about my craft and their need, how can I give them the most remarkable result?
Well, look, I want to just break away from this for a minute. I want to think about this, and I think our producer's waving me on, so don't go away. We've got a commercial rolling up here, and then we will be right back to continue this conversation.
Great.
Smart Business Network is a business-to-business multimedia company providing insight, advice, and strategy for C-level executives of fast growth, middle market, and large companies. As one of the nation's largest publishers of local management journals, under the Smart Business name, Smart Business Network publishes 19 regional print editions, presents dozens of large and small-scale business conferences and award programs, and produces a vibrant interactive digital media presence. For more information, visit us at www.sbnonline.com.
Do you recognize them in your office? It's a common problem for executives and employees everywhere. There's John, over there. He just seems to have his own vision. Unfortunately for you, it's not your company's vision. Then there's Mary, who always seems to fall short of what's expected. You've got people that need to turn it up a notch if you're ever going to hit your goals. The never-ending cost of losing people and having to train the rookies. You constantly worry about losing key people you have become too dependent on. Extended Disc is designed for business owners, executives, and employees just like you. Extended Disc provides you with information to make better business decisions with confidence. Extended Disc helps you and your organization to be more profitable by avoiding decisions that result in expensive mistakes, wasted resources, and time. You see the problem. Extended Disc, the solutions you need to push performance and growth. It's time you made a call to Extended Disc for the solutions you need. Extended Disc, toll free, 1-800-257-7481, or go to www.extendeddisc.com.
And now back to Doug and his guest.
Okay, we're talking with Nancy Egan here. We're having a great conversation about marketing. But before we jump back into that, there was a question about you, Nancy, that I wanted to ask, that we ask all our guests. What's sort of your guiding principle? What experience, what rule did you sort of inherit, acquire early on that really guides you in your dealing with people and businesses?
It's funny because, you know, you prepped us, so I thought about this, and I thought it was the most difficult question on your list, which I'm sure all of your guests say. But
they do, and then they give me brilliant responses.
Well, I started thinking about what really made me become a consultant, and it was the big recession before this last recession. So, and I know you were there in the early 90s. When it was really, really hit the real estate and architecture business very, very hard. And I was working for a large firm in Baltimore, international firm, you know, 4 or 5 offices around the country, office in Japan, one in London. And I had been hired to be the director of marketing communications. And I thought, this is my dream job. This is going to be so much fun. Well, fast forward a year and a half, 2 years, and the bottom is falling out. And mind you, I am actually commuting from Philadelphia to Baltimore every day on the train, which is a terrible commute, except it's not a commuter path. So I have an hour and a half on the train both ways every day. All of a sudden, this big firm, as a response to the recession, is turning to small ideas. And I think we saw a lot of it in this last recession. When people get frightened, they start chasing everything. They want to be all things to all people. They lose clarity about what they really want to do and what really matters to them because they're just scared. Now, as I said, I had this long commute, so I had a lot of time to think on this train. And what had gone from being my dream job to a job where I was filling out government forms 3 days a week, and I was watching people just make bad calls all around me. So I thought, I have to get off of this train. And I meant that both literally and metaphorically. And I think many of us who have gone on our own have had that I've got to get off this train moment. And at one point, I would write in the morning I'd read the New York Times, and on the way home I would write in a journal. And I kept writing down what mattered to me. And I wrote 3 things in the end that seemed to really make a difference. And I still have the card that I wrote it on. And it said, real relationships. I wanted to not have mediated relationships with the people who I was ultimately working for. I wanted to be able to look people in the eye, shake their hand, and contract with them directly. That was very important. I wanted ownership of the work. And by that, I didn't mean necessarily my own business, but that I would never do anything that I wouldn't want my name on.
Oh, I like that one. What a nice way to put it.
And then finally, I wanted to be authentically myself. And I wanted to, whatever I do, to contribute to the authenticity of whoever I was working for. That if, you know, I couldn't be selling things that I didn't believe in, ever. And I didn't ever want to work for someone who was doing that. And what I realized, you know, my skill set really was that I was able to help people tell a story in a compelling way. You know, by helping, you know, getting in their heads a little bit about what they cared about, helping them find their own language that, you know, I don't want it to be my language. I want it to be the best version of their language. And so I think it's, in the end, you know, you talked about the guiding principle. And I think it's what I came up with is that I have a real belief in the power of individuals and firms to call to them those things that they desire most. But one, you have to know what you really want. And two, you have to not chase it. You want to, as much as anything, make your service, product, whatever, so desirable that people come to you. And, I mean, I think we've seen that in, you know, look at Apple. I mean, we all talk about Apple, but it's so true.
Yeah, it is.
We wanted to have that product. We wanted to have that beautifully designed, really functional thing, both of us with our iPads at every meeting.
and proud of it.
And proud of it. We're willing to pay the premium to have the best. And I think that's what I really believe. We can help people be the premium brand. Be the, you know, what is it? It was the Grateful Dead. You don't want to be the best. You want to be the only ones that people believe can deliver what you deliver.
And you know, I want to just grab onto something here because, I mean, when I asked for your guiding principle, part of it was you gave me what matters most to you. That was really what I heard you saying is how you defined what that guiding principle was by defining, just as we were talking earlier, the thing you do for your clients, what matters most to you. And I would venture to say, correct me if I'm wrong, that you developed that a number of years ago, and my guess would be that has not changed at all.
No, I still pull that card out and know that it is what I want to be doing.
See, and I think that's the test of truly understanding what it is you want, what it is that matters most to you, and the environment or the culture that you want to do it in. Now, the execution of that may change to meet the market, to meet your economy, to meet needs, but the guiding principle stays the same. Wouldn't you agree?
I totally agree. And I think the hardest thing is, I mean, I don't think I certainly couldn't have written those things down without a certain amount of experience and a certain amount of really soul searching.
Yeah.
And asking, you know, what is it you want to do?
So this isn't the kind of thing that we're going to suddenly decide Friday afternoon we're going to leave the office and go down to the local bar and we're going to have a creative session and have come up with what matters the most to us so that we can then put it in writing on Monday morning.
I don't think so.
Yeah, I would agree with you. Those things don't last. We find ourselves redoing them all the time.
Well, and I think you can certainly get some of them down. And the more the organization or the individual is in touch with some of it, that they've had maybe some setbacks, they've had to think about things, they've started a business and had it not work out quite the way they wanted, or they had a partner that, you know, the partnership didn't work. I think those are the individuals and the organizations that are probably closer to being able to do it in a shorter amount of time.
Wonderful. Well, Nancy, I don't want to let the afternoon slip away here without talking for a little bit. You told me earlier before the show when we were talking, your three rules for marketing.
I did.
Share that with the audience.
It sounds like way too simple for this woman who taught in all those places, right? But my first rule is what we've really focused primarily on this afternoon. What do you know about you? And the second one is, what do you know about them? What do you know about the clients? And I don't think we can ever spend too much time, you know, out talking to the clients. And I treasure, even though I don't do it as much as I did when I worked inside of a firm, I still go oftentimes to, you know, Urban Land, not because I need to be there to sell my services, but rather that I want to know what my clients need to know about their clients. And so I think getting to know the clients, finding ways to ask meaningful questions of them about their needs and their goals are really important. And then the third thing is really what the other part of my business is, what do they know about you? And how can you tell engaging stories, you know, relevant discussions of issues? How do you get those things in front of people so that, first, you want to get heard. Second, you want to be understood. And third, you want to have an aura, you know, where they say, oh, we've got it. We're putting the short list together. It'd be a big mistake if we didn't have them on it.
Perfect. And you know, I think people spend a little bit of time identifying, knowing about themselves and what they want. Not enough, in my opinion. They spend maybe more time knowing a little bit about their clients because they think that's going to create the sale. And they spend almost no time identifying what the clients know about them.
Right.
You know, and one of the biggest mistakes, and this is one I've made, I continue to make, I guess I'm a slow learner, is that you have a client that you've worked with for a long time and you assume they know all about you. And then all of a sudden you're having a conversation and they go, oh, you do that? Oh, I didn't know that.
About to hire somebody else.
You know, what's this person doing in there? Oh, they're doing this. I do that. Oh, I didn't know that, Doug. You know, and it's sort of like, well, I told you what I do. Well, when did I tell them? I told them 6 years ago when we had our first meeting for my first engagement. And I expect them to remember it because it's really important to me.
Well, I think that, actually one of the great benefits of social media, if you... you know, make the commitment to do it, is that it gives multiple opportunities to engage with clients over a long time. And you're not giving them a big sales pitch because I hate what I think of as, you know, the kind of broadcast of look at our new project, look at this, look at that. But rather the people who engage and ask questions. And then they learn about you in bits and pieces, and they start to put together a much more complicated picture of you, even as you were putting together a much more complicated, nuanced picture of them. And so while it's tough, and I certainly feel like everyone is a novice in the social media landscape, I think it's a huge and tremendous opportunity for organizations.
Can you be a little more specific for businesses when you say social media?
I'm talking about there are a couple different things that I'd be talking about. One would be, I think, probably the one that almost everyone is somehow touched by is Facebook, and whether you're using it for, you know, personal to look at pictures of your grandkids and catch up with your old friends, people know Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, blogging. Blogging is a great way that I think for businesses in particular, blogging is a very powerful way of getting your clients and potential clients to have a much richer, deeper picture of what matters most in your firm and what are the kinds of things that you're engaged in, have expertise in, and can help your clients with. And then, you know, now every day there's another one that I can't seem to keep up with, Pinterest and some of these others. But I'm not, I think different businesses will find different platforms, these social media platforms, to serve them well. If you're in a highly visual business like interior design or my stepdaughter, who is a children's photographer, is very successful on Pinterest, and people do find her work there because it's a great way of displaying highly visual things. I think blogging for many businesses presents itself as a great way to demonstrate knowledge and really good, anyway, technical knowledge, social knowledge, all kinds of different kinds of knowledge. And I think it's part of this whole new move where we have new kinds of literacy.
Explain that.
That, you know, we have, you know, reading literacy. We have gaming literacy. I mean, you've got grandkids. Can you believe how they can do this stuff on these games?
Well, they beat me every time.
Me too. But they have a kind of literacy with those games and those devices that is different than the ability to read or even, visual ability. It's a totally other thing. So all of these different kinds of literacy are in play. And these different platforms give us an opportunity to connect with our clients, our friends, a whole universe of opportunities in different ways that connect through these different ways of learning. Does that make sense?
It makes a lot of sense. And obviously, I can see that the next place to go with this conversation, which we're not going to do today, is, okay, so then you've got to identify where your clients are, which one of those medias are they using, where are they going to find you, where are they going to run into you, so that you're not, as a coach, it wouldn't serve me to start posting stuff to Pinterest.
No.
blogging might be better. Targeted emailing might be better. A newsletter,
right, exactly.
So it's a matter of then tailoring not only the message, but the media that you're going to use to deliver the message, correct?
Exactly.
That's wonderful.
You're a great student, Doug.
Well, look, as we get ready to wrap up here, Nancy, I have a tendency to talk over people, so I want to give you a chance. Is there something that you wanted to get out that I interrupted, we didn't cover, that you want to share with the audience here?
Gosh, it's just been such a great conversation. I feel like we've covered a lot of territory. And I think really what I hope is that people will have listened and go, let me think some more about this. And then if they would like to talk more about it, and really no matter what business they're in, I think good conversation always makes all of the interlocutors more wise. So let's keep talking, and people can find me online. They can find me on Twitter at New Voodoo. You can find me on Instagram at New Voodoo, and you can find me on my website at newvoodoo.com.
Okay, so you've got to tell me what's with this New Voodoo business.
Well,
How
did I get that? Well, people would ask what I did, and I would, launch into a long description, and, eyes would glaze over. And finally, I would say, it's amateur voodoo. I help you get what you want. I was with one of my smart alecky clients, and he goes, Nancy, you're not an amateur.
Well, this is one of the things I love about working with you, Nancy, is sometimes you get to the heart of the message in two words, and we don't have to mess around with a whole lot of dialogue. And, nobody is going to forget Nancy Egan, New Voodoo. What does she do? She is creating voodoo, black magic, whatever you want. I've never seen her with a chicken, but,
I've certainly seen her come up with
magical answers.
We're all, to some degree, musicians. And I think that's what I try and help people understand. You can do this.
Wonderful. Nancy, I want to thank you for being with us today. And I'd love to have you back again when we can talk about another topic. And let me just say, welcome to the Coaching Perspective Radio community.
Well, thank you so much. And I look forward to seeing you on Thursday at our clients.
Okay. Have a great evening.
You too. Thank you, Doug. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye. Hey, before we end here today, a couple of things I want to be sure to get out. Tomorrow, OC Talk Radio, noon to 5. This is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. Annually, the International Coach Federation around the world sets aside a week to encourage the local chapters and coaches to give back to the community, make the community aware of what coaching's about. And so this year, the Orange County chapter is doing that through octalkradio.net by having 5 hours of nonstop guests, experts in the coaching field, who will be interviewed and be talking about topics here on OC Talk Radio. And it will be a great chance for you to hear a lot of really good information. Now, I know many of you are more comfortable not setting aside a time slot for me. You like to go to our podcast and listen to them later, and we appreciate that, and that's wonderful. But let me just say, for those of you who are coaches and are looking to get your continuing coaching credits, your CCEUs that you need to renew your license every 3 years, you will have to listen to the broadcast live, because we will hand out we will announce a code word that will not be on the recorded messages. We'll announce a code word that will allow you to get up to 5 CCEUs listening to the broadcast. So, hey, that all by itself is worth the price of admission, which is zero. So if you want to know more information, go to the coachesoforangecounty.com, and you can see more information and see the program. And if you're limited and don't have 5 hours, you can pick out those speakers that you would like to hear. I'm going to be on the air from 4 to 5, kind of wrapping it up with two great guests to talk about group coaching with Steve Smith and Dave Kinar. And so I'll look forward to hearing you twice this week as part of our show. Thanks for joining us. I hope that we have given you information today that is going to make a difference in your life that you can apply immediately.
You've been listening to the only show that looks at business from a different perspective, The Coaching Perspective, with Master Certified Business Coach Doug DeFeller.